Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mr. Pygmy and the Man-Hater Show. I am your host, the Man-Hater, even though I don't hate men.
There's fireworks going on right now. It's cool. It's something going on. Oh, no, now it's a lightning storm. Visual pranks for our
Jessica
audio podcast
loves
again.
Loves visual pranks for our audio podcast.
Let me get out of this storm real quick and say, oh, God, paparazzi. Oh, no. Guys, please. Oh, okay. I'm going back inside. Oh.
Okay. So Chesco can now control the lights in his office by his phone, and he's doing a full-on light show for us today. Jesus, just stop it.
There. We're back to normal. Oh, no. This light bulb's faulty over here. My name is Chesco, and I'm here to say, how do I turn them back on?
Chesco, turn the lights on.
Okay. There we go. Welcome to our radio podcast hour. Today we are sponsored by lights.
Who are you?
The Mr. Pick'ems, but I've already been pick'emed. And we are here on our show for you, which today will be done in musical form. Hit it, Reagan.
No. No, 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 no.
Our Hamilton-inspired podcast.
No. You go. Go. You want you go ahead. Don't you cue me in. Don't you set me up to do a Hamilton rap.
My name is Chesco Mr. Pick Me. They call me Chesco Mr. Pick Me. There's a million radio shows you haven't heard. Just you wait. Just you wait. Just wait, everybody. Eventually, we'll get to the show. Reagan stops dicking around on this show.
They had to wait through your entire light show where they don't know what's going on.
Audio light show. They felt it. I'm sure our podcast listeners were like, that felt hilarious. The silence as you judged me. I think that's going to make for great radio.
Which we are not on. So
yet.
we upgrade to radio and then we go to the Telegraph. Okay.
I think I could. I don't know. How hard is that? How hard is it to get a radio show?
Do you have the equipment?
I don't know. Can we do like satellite radio? Can that work? We don't need to be. Do we need to be on AM, FM, or can we be on Sirius? I feel like all radio is podcasts. Just longer with music sometimes, right? That's all it is. The radio shows were like podcasts before podcasts.
I miss the good old days when there were stories on the radio. That was before I was born.
I was like, were you alive during that part for radio theater? You mean audiobooks that you can still listen to?
I'm a vampire. No, it was so when they used to do like the folly, you know, so they'd be like someone, and there was someone at the door. Although hear like steps and stuff. Oh God.
Did you ever listen to like the morning radio shows growing up? Were you old enough that you had those?
Delilah. There was a time where we liked Delilah. Do you know who that is?
You don't know Delilah? No.
She would like answer letters and give advice. Oh no. Chesco.
We had in the Bay Area, the big one was the Doghouse. It was the and they would do all sorts of weird shit. It was on Real Young was Wild 107. Then it was Wild 94.9 Doghouse in the Morning. And they would go and do weird stuff. Like one time they shut down the Golden Gate Bridge to give some guy a haircut. It was really illegal shit they were doing. And then when I went to Arizona, I listened to John Jay and Rich for a while, and they were pretty big. I think they're nationally syndicated. I don't remember, but the Doghouse was my first one. That was the big one for us back when the actual, do they still have like morning radio? I think they still have morning radio shows,
well,
right?
Well, I remember when I realized that like, okay, sorry, spoiler, sorry for everyone.
Oh no.
Like 90% of the phone calls are fake because like I started getting asked to audition to do radio calls, which I did not.
Oh, no.
But I knew people who called in as these callers, and like there's so many shows it's like where it'll be like missed opportunity or someone will call in about their date and then the person will call back. It's always fake. Like, it's never real. And once I realized that, it definitely made those shows not as fun.
The one that it killed me when I found out that, like, TV court shows were fake. That destroyed me. Because it was when
Judy
I saw...
Judy has no power, really.
It was way later on. Are my lights still changing? Or am I just crazy?
You're just crazy.
I'm just crazy.
Crazy.
Doghouse in the morning. John Jay and Rich on the radio.
Yikes.
With Kyle. Somebody listening is going to know what I'm talking about. What was I just talking about?
You said finding out that court cases
court shows. It was way later than I should have. Like, I should have known for a long time ago that it was not. But it was fairly recently, a clip came up from one, and I knew one of the people because of social media. I was like, that's not, and I knew the stuff they were saying was, they were very specifically playing a character. I don't want to give too much away, but I was like, oh, is this, and I messaged them. I was like, were you on? I think it was Judge Judy. Were you on Judge Judy? And they were like, oh, yeah, that was one of my first acting gigs. So I was like, acting gigs?
Wait!
Oh! And they were like, yeah, did you not know? That's like, they're all...
They're like, always actors.
I don't know all of them, at least I know multiple people now that have told me that they were on at least one form of those daytime. I'm sure they probably do have some real ones.
But now.
That are in there to, or at least maybe early on they did, but then you run out of interesting stories probably pretty quickly at least.
Well, that's like Jerry Springer, like definitely right. Had actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of actors, today we're going to talk about a stand-up comedian calling someone out on stage and they didn't like it. Theme song!
You want bad advice, man? I'll give it out gladly.
I got some good advice for ya.
No, you don't.
Like, no, you don't.
I got some good advice for ya.
No, you don't.
Like, no, you don't.
Shit.
I don't think I like this comedy show anymore.
I don't think I like this comedy show anymore. And he never changed.
It never gets to the, I think I like this comedy show.
Yeah, no, it's just, oh, that was a fucking terrible idea to go on a date at this comedy show.
Do you want to do any lead up or do you want me to just play it?
Just play it. just do it.
Hamilton. Okay.
We'll put on the show. Never mind.
What?
So, all right. So, just setting the stage. It's a comedian.
Why are you doing?
No, because just to make sure, it's a comedian. There's a couple in the audience. I forgot because this is an audio podcast. There's a couple in the audience. Is there, and the comedian is talking. Like, he's doing audience interaction.
Banter stuff
crowd with work. It, and he goes and talks to this man and woman are there on a date.
All right, let's see how this goes for this guy.
How old are you?
28.
You gonna meet someone better than that?
No,
so why not marry her? You love him? You're gonna marry her? You say yes? Ask her right now. I'll pay for the whole front row. Even these fools right here, I'll pay for the whole front row. It's his fault if you guys pay. I'll put $2,000 towards your ring. Ma'am, how does this make you feel that he's just not right off the bat asking you? He's fake, right?
Yes. Yep.
You're gonna change your mind or not? No, huh? Like, no matter, look at that. The proof is in the pudding, man, and you're gonna stay, huh? You're pendeja, huh? Walk out, go ahead, we'll respect you. Hey, go backstage. Hey, I'll take care of you. Hey, make sure she gets backstage. Hey, get the baby oil. I appreciate your girl, Bubba. You gotta appreciate her, man. Oh, she's appreciating all of us right now. Appreciate your girl, man. Hey, chill out, bro. Chill out. Bro, hey, chill out. Hey!
It was a fan.
Okay, the last part, mm-hmm. which you can't see because this is an audio podcast.
Right.
So she's backstage, literally. He takes her backstage and keeps her there. And then he says something about baby oil, which is very scary.
Which is, yeah.
It's a joke. It's clearly a joke.
Yeah.
At a comedy thing. And then the guy goes backstage to find her. Then they both kind of leave. And the very last second is the guy who is dating the woman screaming at the comedian because he was outed for not ever going to be ready to commit.
Right.
That was amazing. Mm-hmm. That was so great. He's like, do it. Like when he starts throwing bills down, basically,
yep.
$2,000 if you do it right now. I can't, if I was, okay, hold on. Collect my thoughts. I'm like, I'm
so much to say, down. I know.
But like, I'm thinking about if, first of all, she's way out of his league just mm-hmm. from if we're going from looking at both of them, like she's looks like a queen. Mm-hmm. And so they're sitting there. And then like if I was her and the first thing out of his word or like out of his mouth about why he wasn't marrying me is because it's hard. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What mm-hmm. does that mean, Chesco?
There's no real way to it's very clearly he's like, I don't, this is not going to work out. Like, this is not, I don't actually want to marry her.
Yes.
And it's just that he's trying to think of one way. Cause it could be like, he could have recovered. He could have been like, look, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it right.
Right.
I want to do it. Like, he could have just said something, but it was very clear that he was unprepared to respond because he was, the comedian was right. Like
yeah.
there was, it was full on. Like he was like, he read what was going on.
He clocked it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, he clocked this guy. You can tell mm-hmm. that almost immediately somehow, I don't know this comedian. I don't know anything about him, but
yeah, I know he could be terrible. We have no idea.
Sure.
But
he clearly mm-hmm. knew exactly what situation it was, mm-hmm. which like, it's a common situation where mm-hmm. women will stay with men and men will kind of leave them on the line as if, oh, maybe mm-hmm. someday you'll get that ring. When in reality, they have no intentions of marrying this woman mm-hmm. and they never are going to. So somehow he clocks it and he is like, okay, no, bet. Let me keep pushing this. Show me how much let's show this woman how much you are not going to marry her.
He's like, would you like he goes to her, right? So it's not just like the two, because it could have been weird if it was just two guys discussing her like she was completely like
sure
inconsequential. But he does go to her. He was like, would you want to marry, like would you be interested in, like would this be something? And she says yeah, like, I want to be with him. And then he's like all right, there we go, we got consent to her wanting to marry you right now. Like he actually mm-hmm. did at least that step of including her in that conversation. Then he goes right back to the guy. He's like, so now we're on you.
Yeah. I'll buy your ring. I'll pay for the seats of the people next to you. I feel like he just knew that where that was going. He knew that this guy was not going to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I like, don't love the baby oil joke, you know, like he's definitely being a little shady with that. That's a little mm-hmm. weird. But I think that is the joke of it all. But mm-hmm. the second she's off stage, he just keeps repeating, you need to appreciate your girl. You mm-hmm. need to appreciate your girl.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this clear understanding between the two guys. And I think it is so often that it's the men understanding what the men are doing. Like there's mm-hmm. so many times that men will be being shady and like the other men are completely aware of the game that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've mm-hmm. gotten great advice from men because they have a really good awareness about what men are doing. Like they, mm-hmm. they understand the situation better than I did, you know? And so it's like those two men knew exactly what each other's game was. And he mm-hmm. was just really putting on the pressure for mm-hmm. him to admit. Cause it's like, appreciate your girl. Like that's what it is. Like you don't get to have this beautiful, woman with you for whatever amount of time, when you know she wants to get married and you're leading her on to believe that she is going to, like,
stop wasting her time.
Yeah, you're wasting her time. To me, it is such like a horrific thing that happens all the time, which is, and we talked about this last episode, which is like lying by omission or omitting things because you know it means you're going to break up. You don't have the right to string somebody along when you know that what they're hoping for, they're never going to get. When you know you're dangling a carrot that they're never going to get a bite of. You know what I mean? Like, he knows that. And there's so many times that, I mean, any gender can do this. Someone will do that to somebody else in a relationship and feel justified. It's like, yeah, but if you told her the truth, that person would leave you. If you told him the truth, he would leave you. Them the truth, you know?
And that's the key. I want to stop on that for a second too, because it's, you don't need to get married, right? Marriage does not have to be a goal for everybody. We both understand that. We both are, we're not saying it has to be that way. But this specific situation that we're talking about is when someone clearly wants to have that be the end goal. And then the other partner is making it appear like, oh, yeah. No, no, that's totally, we'll eventually get there. I just need to say, like, it's like, you know, I just want to make sure I save up enough for the ring
or
any number of excuses. And then when that barrier is removed that they've been using as their reason not to do it, and they still don't do it, that's the problem. That's where you see where it's, oh, that, and it's, the, I fucking love this video because it's, I love seeing men call out other men.
Yes. Right.
Like, you brought up that point, and it's because it doesn't happen nearly enough. Like, I've talked about on in the political sphere that, you know, I make a lot of political content. Somebody asked me before, they're like, why don't you see, you know, why aren't there more speech props? Right. And I was like, there are people, you know, there are like Professor Neil, there's Sizer, there's, you know, there a fair amount of guys that are starting to finally do it, but there's so many giant political creators that I know agree with me, that I'm mutuals with, but don't really spend even 1% of their time calling out this bullshit that is going on out there that is benefiting them. A lot of them are single guys, right? And it's a problem. I'm like you can't just leave it. And the reason it upsets me is they can see that if you ask them as a white person, do you think you should be speaking out against racism? They'd say, yeah, of course. Shouldn't just be up to people of color and black people and anybody else to speak out against that. Then they'd okay, cool. And if you bring up like homophobia, they'd be like, well, you're a straight guy. Do you think you should be talking? Like, of course, shouldn't just be to. But for some reason, when it comes to like misogyny and the patriarchy, crickets, right? It'll be like very rarely when it's like a subtle thing about it that's intertwined with politics, but it's, they don't, even though it's so intertwined, right? The amount of guys that are making red pill content that will then move on and also have a video about like white genocide or some other weird, crazy, inane, like conspiracy or like racist trope or conservative thing. They're right there. It's a pipeline for young men to join these really kind of alt-right, not just conservatism, but like really these weird fringe alt-right conspiracy QAnon kind of type things that are there, yet they're not being called out because it benefits men not to call out other men. It's hard too, because then you lose the guys, you lose the boys.
That's
right?
Exactly,
you lose your boy
it.
Followers.
I think from my perspective, it always feels like they don't want to lose their card to the boys club. They know, well, if I call this out, then the boys are not going to like it. And I mean, like, literally, like, the men in their following are going to have a problem with it. Like, when I have spoken on Palestine, I had somebody, like, review bomb me over it. When I have spoken, I had a video with Jamila Bradley, who, if you don't know who they are, they're amazing. Check them out. But we were talking about how white women often are the nice guys of women. I think White Woman Whisperer coined that. Also, she's great. Anyways, but I got a fellow white woman just came at me. And that is what happens when you go after the group that you're a part of. You're going to get a lot of heat. And I think it's necessary, but a lot of people don't want to deal with it. And so they want to just be like, yeah, in private, in the right conversation, usually to people who agree with me, I'm totally on your side. Mm-hmm. But it's like, those aren't the people that need to have conversations with. The people mm-hmm. who agree with you, you already agree.
Right.
The conversations need to happen with people who are not acting right. Mm-hmm. And it's like I see you. I see that you're not acting right, and I'm going to mm-hmm. out you for not acting right. And we can all have a very public dialogue about what you're mm-hmm. doing right now, because it's kind of messed up. Now, in this case, probably was an unexpected call out for right. the guy in the audience.
Right.
But once he had him, mm-hmm. and he was right. And like, clearly something, I would say it meant something to the comedian, because he would not let it go. Mm-hmm. Where he was just like, dude, you need to appreciate your girl. Like, I kept thinking it would lead into a joke. But he was just like, appreciate her, man. Yeah. Like, appreciate your girl, like, over and over. And that's what we need to see more of, is this call out. When you see it, like, see something, say something.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if the guy had listened to him, mm-hmm. his life would be better, theoretically, yes. right? Assuming we don't know her, she might be a horrific person who kicks puppies. I don't know anything right. about her, but assuming he's with her for a reason
right.
and he enjoys being with her and she makes his life better, and that he is true that he does eventually want to be married and be with this person. And that's like when I just made a video just yesterday about this, the whole thing, like when guys accuse me of being like anti-men, I'm like, everything I say in my channel is fucking is with the belief that men are inherently not evil.
Right.
Right. That we are not hardwired to be shitty. Right. That is not misandry in any sort of form. We can go into the whole thing. I don't fucking believe in misandry, but in general, but as from a structural perspective, there's no such thing as it. But if you want to talk about it just from a pure, like, who hates men, it's these fucking red pill coaches. It's these other men who think men are terrible, who are incapable of empathy, who are incapable of compassion, who are incapable of treating people in the way that they deserve to be treated. That's like way closer to any form of structural misandry that you're going to find are men holding down other men to not share their feelings, to not share their emotions, to engage in violent, destructive acts. There was a video recently, I don't know if you saw this one, where this guy was asking his buddies, hey, do you remember when I went through that really hard breakup?
Yes.
And they were like, I think I kind of, they didn't know her name. They didn't know. And he was like, really, he was saying, oh yeah, I was really struggling emotionally.
Yeah.
At that point. And they're like, oh yeah, we didn't know. And that's the destructive nature of when I talk about at least that, like, toxic masculinity. Yes. It harms women. Absolutely. And I think the violence against women is the thing that needs to be called out, because that is immediate. That's direct. It's something that's in your face, and it's something that we need to solve right off the bat. The underlying things, toxicity, though, is the fact that it is men hurting other men into doing these. The violence, they always bring up, you know, oh, well, men are victims of violence too. Yeah, from other fucking men, right? It's guys causing the violence against you. It's guys, and it's the they don't bring up suicide rates. Yeah, why is it that? It's because men are told they're weak for seeking out therapy, for seeking out help, for taking medication, for letting their emotions out to somebody, right? These are all oppressive things being done to men mm-hmm. in the name of misogyny and the patriarchy, yet I'm the one that apparently is the evil one for wanting to undo that system and to speak out against that system. Sorry, that was a soapbox moment right there.
No, I mean, you're right. Like, you speaking to it is more of a mm-hmm. problem than it existing. It's one of those mm-hmm. things where people are like, well, don't talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, we all know about it. You're like, okay, well, let's do something. I think something very telling in that exchange is like mm-hmm. how toxic whatever is going on with this guy is, because just like looking at it in that moment, he could have said like, okay, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, he could have gotten engaged and gotten like mm-hmm. Whatever ring
mm-hmm.
like it, and it could have not been like, and then later changed his mind mm-hmm. or then had a long engagement, you know what I mean, like
mm-hmm.
there's lots of ways that could
he could have remained toxic for years.
Yes. No, but
yeah,
really. No,
you're right. You're right, though. No, yeah.
But he was so anti being challenged by another man that he wouldn't give an explanation and he would not budge. And on the one hand, I'm like, well, I'm glad you're being honest that you're never going to marry her, although I bet this is the first time you're being honest about it. Mm-hmm. But how toxic, how like toxically masculine are you that you're doing this to this woman, but also that because this comedian is pressing you, you're going to absolutely be like, no, no way. They're going to embarrass your girlfriend. You're going to like, that's why I think it was smart of the comedian to keep giving incentives to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, look how much he's doubling down. Look how much he's refusing to give you anything. He would rather not get $2,000 for a ring and not be the good guy who's paid for everybody's seats in the front row than be with you, than marry you. Think about the weight of that. And I think it's so telling about this man that like he would rather hold his ground to be like more dominant or whatever he thought he was doing. Then like he could have easily said like, hey, sorry, I was put under pressure or whatever. He's just like, no, no, it's hard. And like, who knows? There could be other factors as to why he can't. God, I hope he's not married. You know what I mean? Like, I hope he doesn't have other things going on.
The key thing too is that when I talk about like calling other guys along this line, it's the real life ones that matter way more than any video I've ever made, right? And it's when I say like other creators need to do it, I want to see proof though that they are actually doing the real world work, right? I want to know, and I don't know that, you know, just because someone doesn't talk about it online does not mean they aren't like absolutely doing the actual work that matters that's out there. One of the things somebody messaged me, which made me reinvigorate, for, you know, this is a couple years ago, where I was kind of burning. I'm like, what am I doing? You know, why am I spending so much time making this kind of content? And they messaged me and they said that the way that I responded to someone gave them, in a matter of words, I don't remember the exact, but the verbiage, the words to call out somebody in their own life, right? So that they could explain why what they were doing was harmful. And so it was like, so sometimes I think the role of like social media and things like this can be in that regard. It's like, oh, we're not the ones making the social change,
right?
But it can be awareness to help people to make that change in their own life. How do I respond to this? Because a lot of people don't know. It's like, why is that toxic? Why is that bad? I don't even understand. Why is this? Is this a bad thing? And then you need to understand the psychology and everything that goes into it.
I think it is helpful because those situations in real life, like if you're not, you know, a comedian on a stage where you have the microphone and you have the power, you know, in that situation, when it's like an interpersonal one-on-one conversation, it is very awkward. It can be very scary. I've gotten much better over the years, but I used to get really fired up. Like I would get overly emotional because these things matter to me. But I think when you have people on social media who talk about these issues, they can give you that verbiage or like a more succinct explanation about things that you could say to someone in the heat of the moment. Because in the heat of the moment, it's very hard to get your wits about you. I think, especially if it's something that's very upsetting to you, but having like, you know, these videos and these creators to go to and say, okay, they broke it down this way, that felt effective, I can use that here. I think that's a really good thing because it is more important in those moments. Like those little moments between people, that's where people change. Like if dudes got constantly called out by other men publicly, for the shit that they were doing and why that looks bad or why that's misogynist or why that makes them not a good man, quote unquote, their behaviors would change so much quicker. Because when I have called men out in public, they like you can tell that they're horrified to be publicly called out. Like there's something about like because so much of seemingly so much of masculinity is performative. That like in the real world, being called out for that and what that means for them and how that reflects on them as a man, I think is very telling. And so it's like those are the moments that really, really count. And those are the moments that will create change for them, because mm-hmm. it's discomfort that causes change. If men are comfy in their misogyny, they're not going to ever change.
Mm-hmm. And it goes across all issues. You see the, that leaked, young Republican chat. They came
where they're calling them kids and they're
in their 30s. I think there was even a 40-year-old in there too. Like, it's the dumbest thing. But that's what happens when you have this environment of unchecked aggression, where someone says something, someone tests the waters, mm-hmm. and when nobody speaks out against it, somebody else does something. And now the culture of that, whether it's a chat room or a locker room or whatever you mm-hmm. want to call it, a sports team, whatever it is, once that culture becomes that's acceptable, then you need to step in before it gets to that point, right? Because once it gets to that point, then you're the quote unquote weird one that's going to be ostracized out of that room for having basic decency.
Right.
I wrote my part of my master's thesis was on World of Warcraft. And one of the chapters was on exactly this. I got to go into I got access because I had friends that were like really high-end raiders in the game. And every single time I got access, it was racist, sexist, homophobic. And there were people that were diverse groups of people. It wasn't just a bunch of little white boys like in this group saying this stuff, but the culture in there was just to the point. And I remember my friend who is a bisexual Asian woman was, I said to her, I was like, why are you? She was like, oh, well, that's not really them. That's not actually, that's just how they talk in the game. Right. That's just like, and it was so that they're able there when, like I said, once you're so saturated in it, I think you get to the point where you don't need, and also when state, like even the Young Republican chat's a great example. There are certain things where you're like, well, I can't say anything because I need this connection. In World of Warcraft, it was, I can't say anything because this is the top guild. If I say something, then I'm not going to be in the top guild anymore. So I can't be the one to say, and then they end up engaging in it and taking part in it. And people that would never say these horrific things, right? Because they know in quote unquote real life that that's not okay to say, are now engaging in it as part of the culture that's been established because no one's fucking saying anything, right? If you're doing it right, people should be uncomfortable being sexist, being racist, being transphobic, being whatever ism you want to throw in there. They should feel weird. If they say something, their immediate reaction when they notice you're there is that it should be like, oh, fuck.
I fucked up. Well, I've talked about this before. Oh, one thing I do want to say, sorry. Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to say about that is like, there is also this culture of like, I think some people are just outwardly hateful people, period, mm-hmm. for whatever reason. But I also think there are people who are miserable and mm-hmm. who are ostracized in their own communities for whatever reasons. Like, I would say the young Republicans who are in their 30s to 40s, let us be clear about that. If you look at them, I would guess based on like our society's judgments on like what beauty is and like what masculinity is, that they weren't the top tier men. You know, they were probably, mm-hmm. I would guess they were bullied. I would guess there are men that make them feel inferior. That mm-hmm. would be my assumption based on what I know about our society. And so it's like, well, I can't be the top tier in my group, but I can always mm-hmm. be better than somebody else. And I feel like mm-hmm. that's so often when we see this hate and this prejudice. It's like, well, I got to hate on somebody. I got to be better mm-hmm. than somebody, because even if I'm the lowest in my group, I'm still above these people that I think I'm better than, or who mm-hmm. I'm bringing down, or who I'm judging. And so like you see people doing this. And mm-hmm. so I think a lot of that culture is that inferiority, this like, well, mm-hmm. I got to hate on these other people. And that's really scary to me. And even in World of Warcraft, it's like, well, I could be cool by being horrible to somebody else. And mm-hmm. it's like, I'm willing to sacrifice my morality and mm-hmm. I'm willing to harm others if it means I get a leg up. Mm-hmm. And that's horrifying, but often the case. And as for like the discomfort, like I think I've talked about this. I have this, the acting thing. Was that the pre-show or here? I don't remember. I think it might've been a pre-show, but I have a gig where like I deal with a lot of different like actors, and like there's a lot of guys that work there that are part of this team, this group. And like, there are some people who have opposite beliefs as me and will say shitty things. And like, I started being so intense with them about when I would catch them saying something offensive, inappropriate. Usually, you know, you get into like someone being sexual, whatever. And I would call them out every single time. And it was very tiring, but we got to a point that they didn't say that shit around me. Like there's this one guy that I work with that like, something came up that could vaguely be perceived as a sexual phrase. Like, you know, you could, that's what she said kind of thing. And he looks at me and he goes, I'm not saying anything around you. And I was like, thank you. That's the goal. I don't want you to, that's great for me. And I remember I let up, at a specific like gig, I was like, I'm not going to monitor everybody. Like, I'm not their mother. I don't want to do that. And I let up, and like, the jokes started getting a little bit worse. And then amongst people who normally did not say like terrible things. And then somebody took it too far. And I remember I like slammed my hand on the table and I was like, don't say that, because someone sexualized somebody else. And it's like, it is exhausting to have to hold that line. And like, people did get talked to after that by like higher ups, but it's the idea of like, if you hold the line enough, people will not start shit around you if you make it uncomfortable enough for them and be willing to make them uncomfortable. That's where the change happens. I promise you. Like, I think people think that they have to like make it like, okay, like I want to talk to you, but I don't want to lose like friendship with you, or like, you know, I want to be cordial about it. No. If someone is saying something that is racist, homophobic, whatever, you don't have to be nice about calling out that is not appropriate, and that you will not stand for that in your presence, and that you will call them out. Because these, rarely do people who are like that want to feel like they are bad people. They'll want to talk tough, but they don't want to think, go home at night and get in their bed and think, wow, I kind of was an asshole today. So as much as they act like they don't care, a lot of times if you call them out in public, they will then be like, oh shit, I don't want to look like the bad guy.
Right.
And that's what works, sadly.
And because it does bleed out into even when you're not there too. Because if it's in the back, then they're at least thinking about it and they're aware of it. And it doesn't mean you have to be like sometimes I know friends that are like, almost too wet blankety. Where it's like, you can't even like enjoy life at all. Like, there's certain things. They probably say the same, sort of guarantee there are people that say the same thing about me. Because of that. But it's a matter of just like making sure it, because you don't always have to go like, you know, if you step in, I guess, before it gets to the really bad part, then it's not as awkward for them too. Exactly. It's not as awkward for anybody, right? I have a family member that we were visiting once where they said something very racist that I can tell in their social circle was okay to say. And I immediately took them aside and I said, I just want you to know, if I ever hear you say something like that again, the kids will never be over here again. I will never be here again. And the kids will never be here either. And I just want you to, and they're like, well, I didn't. I was like, no, I don't want to hear your explanation. I don't want to hear, there's no discussion on this. I'm letting you know right now that is the line that you just crossed. And if I hear it again, we will be going. And they were like, you could tell they were mad at me. But they didn't say shit, and they have never, and we, you know, we don't see this family very often, but whenever we see them, they don't say that. And so,
and I think I think a lot of people have the fear of like the wet blanket thing, but like, I'm a very fun, I mean, not to shoot my own horn here, but like, I'm a fun person. I love a joke. Like, I'm always riffing with somebody. Like, I get along. Like, even the men left unchecked and like before I was checking them, like they want to talk to me constantly. And so it's like, it's not, what I mean by that is you you're not a wet blanket if you don't allow someone to sexually harass you. Mm-hmm. You're not a wet blanket if you don't let someone be racist. Like, there are mm-hmm. some things, like, I will hard stop a good time mm-hmm. if I hear somebody being racist, if I hear mm-hmm. somebody being homophobic, like, I will kill the vibe. Mm-hmm. But in reality, you killed the vibe. Like, mm-hmm. I am simply reacting to the murder of the vibe that you have just committed, because mm-hmm. they are the ones who are doing something that is bad. Like, you are not bad mm-hmm. for calling people out, and people mm-hmm. should not be comfortable doing that. And there's so mm-hmm. many people who can't call that shit out. Like, there's so many situations where mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm in a very privileged position. I don't feel unsafe around my coworkers. I'm not going to mm-hmm. lose my job if I call them right. out.
And that is a key. That's an important point I'm to bring white. Up. The safety, like, is important. Yeah.
I'm very safe. I'm in a very mm-hmm. secure position. And mm-hmm. so if you are in that position, like, be the mm-hmm. one to do it, because mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't, mm-hmm. a lot of people can't. Mm-hmm. And that's horrifying. So if you can be like, if you can be the voice in the back of their mind mm-hmm. thinking like, ooh, I don't want to say something bad because somebody here could be like Reagan mm-hmm. or someone could be like Chesko. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing. Like, you can be, I just want people to know, you can be a great time and a fun person mm-hmm. and you don't lose that because you have standards for what you are willing to allow in your presence.
Mm-hmm. And I also think there's also a level you get to with certain people that mm-hmm. once you know they're who they are, mm-hmm. then it gets to the point where they can say things that are like, might sure. if I heard a rando saying it, I'd be like, what do you mean you like Harry Potter?
Clarification.
You know, something like that. Like, where yeah. I'm like, what expand on that for me, because I don't, you know, there are things that I don't mean like anything horribly offensive, but like sure. there are certain things where it becomes, the entire vibe of the environment becomes looser because you are comfortable and you know who the person is, you know what they believe, so that when there's something that could be interpreted either mm-hmm. as completely innocent or as really fucked up, mm-hmm. you immediately will go to the innocent one because you know who they are and you know what they believe and you know this is not something that they say. And so I think that's the whole point. You want to get to the point where once everyone there, you mm-hmm. know, is not a shitty human being, it yeah. is fun for everybody. And then, because also they're not concerned about the fact that, oh, someone here might not have had the power or felt safe enough to say, to your point, hey, I really didn't like when you said that. So just because you're having fun, does that matter more than the safety of everybody else in that room or the mm-hmm. people that also deserve to be enjoying it? Is that one joke that you had to say mm-hmm. worth ruining somebody else's entire experience? Which it can. Mm-hmm. People don't realize how something that small can be the only thing that somebody else takes away from that entire time 100%. You were together. Yeah.
And context matters. Like, mm-hmm. of course context matters. Like, knowing who people are, that's why it's important to know the values of people, to know mm-hmm. when they're joking. Because the problem is, I've been getting this a lot in my comments lately, which drives me nuts, is people will claim, oh, it's a joke. It's mm-hmm. satire. I'm like, they have shitty beliefs, though. And that's mm-hmm. why they made that joke. Like, right. they have misogynistic beliefs on women, which mm-hmm. is why they think that joke is funny. Mm-hmm. It's not being said as satire as people like mm-hmm. to claim. Like, they genuinely do have some beliefs in there as to why it's humorous to rip on women like that, why mm-hmm. they enjoyed degrading women or whatever group we're talking about. And mm-hmm. so, like, ignoring context is ridiculous. And I think in most situations, like, you know your friends and you know their beliefs, but I also think, like, when you hear something, you can't always assume, well, they're just joking. In certain, like, some settings are worse than others, right? Like, in a work mm-hmm. setting, I'm definitely more intense than I would be mm-hmm. just, like, hanging out with people. But I will always call shitty stuff out, because it gets really old when people like to play things off as a joke when clearly mm-hmm. they're getting satisfaction, even if they're just a shit disturber and they mm-hmm. like seeing people upset. Like, that's enough of a problem for me if that's mm-hmm. what you enjoy.
Yeah. Agreed.
I have a coworker that, like, literally he will, he's much older. So mm-hmm. that's part of it. But, if he finds out something that bothers you, he will continuously bring it up. He's like a, I think he would identify as a libertarian. So like, you know, a lot of them like to argue, right. Not all of them, but I'm just saying a lot of, you know, that's his mindset. And so, there was a while that I would let things go, but eventually I was like, okay, it's, even though you're pulling at everybody for everything all the time, like you're just like getting a rile out of people, like getting a rise out of people. I don't like that trait. Like, I don't like that you enjoy when people are offended. So I don't care. Maybe you don't mean the thing that you say, but you meant to get, you meant to make me upset or her upset. You meant to say something outlandish that made people uncomfortable, and you enjoyed that discomfort. And that to me is, that's enough for me to not like.
Yeah.
Jessica's,
I don't know what else to say. You're right. You're right.
She's on to something here.
She's on to something. Keep saying it.
And you keep saying that sometimes. Yeah.
No, because there are people, I know, we all know that guy that is just like, all right, John, we get it. Yes, you're not like the rest of us. Yeah, you just like playing that role. That is a point you made.
Half the time they don't even believe it. They just wanted to start something. Like, get out of here.
And that's my, I do love, once again, about calling people out. Like, it's like, do you actually care? Well, no, but I'm just saying that. I'm like, shut up then. Shut up. Shut up, John.
Have you seen, one of my favorites is when you're like, are you okay? Are you feeling okay? Because they're like, what? You're like, are you? What? I feel like you're being, you're very, I feel like there's an emotion for you. Are you all right? Mm-hmm. Are you feeling okay? Because it just like completely combats their like energy. They're like, wait, what do you mean? What do you mean? I'm like, you seem, are you frustrated?
Yeah. I do love using like, and it's the only time I'm happy with weaponizing like safe spaces and stuff. Where like when somebody is being really fucking like angry about something that it's, they shouldn't be angry. I'm like, would you like a safe space for your, where you don't have to hear about the poor minorities? Would you like a whites only space for you? Is that going to make you feel better?
Let's time travel to the 50s.
Yeah, let's do that. Is it hard for you to hear how women get violence against them? Is that,
I know,
is that,
it's hard to hear.
That's really, you're the victim. For
don't
the
forget
hearer.
About them suffering it. You have to hear about it.
Poor pobrecito. Hey, let's just, you know, let's get you some some milk, some cookies, and we'll go over here and we'll talk and a Playboy, and we'll just.
We'll do old school. We'll get you a print.
We'll do old school. It'll be great.
We'll model your old playhouse from when you were a boy. The good old days. And you can just sit in there.
The other thing about the, back to the original video that we watched.
Or the topic.
The topic of the show. The almost, and I know this one actually might be a hot take, but almost every single person I know that's married knew pretty, there are exceptions. But knew pretty early on that was the person they were going to marry. Like that was the four people that are monogamous relationships that wanted to get married that are now married. Like I know maybe one couple that has been together for a long time that waited like a long, long time before they finally got married. But almost everyone I know that's in a long-term marriage overwhelmingly was like, oh yeah, we were together for like a month and it was like, yeah, I'm never going to find someone better. This is my person for it. And so like when you find situations like this guy in this video, that's like, I don't know how long they've been together, but it seemed like they've been together for a long time.
That was the vibe.
Like this is like a multi-year relationship.
Right.
If you're at that point and you might have discussed as a couple, like, you know, I think we want to make sure we are in this part of our lives. That's different. I'm not talking about like people that have discussed a reason for waiting.
Right.
It's the ones that are like, oh yeah, no, we're gonna get married one day, and there's nothing really stopping you from just doing it.
And one person wants to.
And one person really wants to, and you've been together long enough, you know, whatever that you want to say that time period is. I don't think it's that long. If you're going to get married, to have that discussion and to actually talk about that, I don't think it's that long. I don't think it's going to be 3 years before you're like, maybe I'll marry this person. At that point, you kind of already know if this is just going to be something until something better comes along. or if it's actually going to be.
I mean, I think there's an epidemic of men just being like, someday, maybe. Thinking though,
there's always going to be something better down the line.
Yeah, I don't know what their thought process is. Yeah. I don't know if they think it's going to be better. They don't. I mean, some men just don't like the commitment, which I'm like, what does that mean you're doing?
Right.
In the meantime.
Right.
But there's just something very nefarious to me about being in a long-term relationship with someone who you are promising you're going to commit to them, because then they spend their life. There are people who spend like decades, like their youth, like literally, like, you know, like a majority of their young life with people, a lot of times men, but it could be any gender, only for the person to be like, actually, I'm going to date this 18-year-old. Or actually, I never wanted to get married. Or actually, I'll have kids with you, but I won't marry you. And you'll just have to settle for that. Like, that is so wrong in so many ways. Like, I wish that held more weight in our valuation of people, because that's really shitty. And I feel like it happens a lot. And then the men just, or whoever did it, are just like, okay, moving on.
It's when they get to the point where they are like, all right, well, I guess this is as good as I'm going to get. It's going to get. So
sometimes they leave though, or never do it.
Yeah, I know.
Like literally they leave.
It's such a terrible reason to get married though. It's like, well,
if they do, you mean,
I mean, and they're because it does happen. We're like, I guess I'm not going to do any better. Yeah. It's like, I guess she's right. I guess this is as good as it gets, so
I have to. Well, it's like, what difference is there, man? Like, what are you? Yeah. I mean,
you should be excited about it. Like, it should be like, it shouldn't be like, this is as good as it gets. It should be like, look how good I got it. Like, this is as good as it gets. It's the intonation there that matters.
But like, my life, there's more stress, I think, as you get older and you get, you know, you get married and there's a lot going on in life, but like, my life, like our relationship didn't change that much. It wasn't such a huge change. I remember growing up being told it's a huge change. I think a lot of people change after they get married. And that's something like what you're expected to be responsible for and what your partner puts into the relationship changes a lot. But like these men, it's like, what do you think you are being held back from? Like, you have someone who, this person who loves you and supposedly you love, like, what is the problem? Like, why? Because they're like, it's not like they're against marriage, just they're against it wholly. Right. It's like they have these other things that they're waiting on. Like, someone else is going to come around. They want to be a bachelor. I'm just like, I think it is wrong to think, well, I'll just have it both ways. I'll have my cake and eat it too. So I will live the married life and have all the benefits of a married man and then not actually be married. That's why I don't give, this is to anybody, every gender, don't give somebody like marriage treatment if you want to be married to them and they will not marry you.
Especially if you're like living with each other.
Yeah.
You know, that's the big thing. Like, cause so my wife and I didn't live with each other before we got married, which I don't recommend. Because it's like, cause I've talked to a lot of people about this and I feel like it's not that, you know, even you're in the honeymoon phase, but then it's also mixed in with learning to live with somebody else. And as much time as you might spend with that person, it's different when you have when everything is a shared space.
Yeah.
And so that first year was, it was just such a, when it could have been much more like us just enjoying being married, it was also combined with figuring everything out. And I get there's benefits to that as well, but I feel, cause also like, I think that might've like for a lot of couples, it can be very, very hard that first year of living with somebody. And if you can survive that, then things are better.
Especially if like somebody is like into traditional gender roles. I have known people that happened to where they got married and they lived together and like all of a sudden, guess what? He had a certain expectation of what she was supposed to do that she didn't know about or he wasn't honest about. That happens all the time. Like, and regardless of gender, like you want to know like around the house, are they going to help out? Is it a 50-50 split? Like, what are you like? What is the dynamic there? Do they clean up after themselves? I mean, I would say more often than not, people don't have the exact same style of living when they get together, like what they'll tolerate, how clean they keep it. Like That's stuff you definitely want to know. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have a conspiracy theory that, like, that's so much of why, like, people say you have to get married first is because they know that if someone saw the way the other person lived, they'd be like, heck no.
Yeah.
I'm not picking up your dirty drawers.
Yeah.
No. You know what I mean? I think, like, I don't want to hate on any, like, if you have traditional, if that's, you know, whatever. Right. If you don't want to live together, whatever. I'm just saying, like, I feel like maybe that plays a part where maybe they're like, just get them married first because then they won't know what they're getting into.
Right.
But that's my theory.
I'm with you. I feel like that is it's one of those things where I think it's becoming more and more normalized, but you still hear people reminiscing about this idea of like, no, we're going to wait till we get married before we, and I just, I don't know. I feel like I said, the one benefit I think is that some people might misunderstand. You have to go into the living with each other with an understanding that it's going to be hard and it's not going to be easy. And that's because the benefit, I guess, of waiting till marriage was like, you know, we weren't going to just like, some people do, I guess it's very common to get divorced after the first year. But like with that, you know, as hard as things were at times, we're like, we just got married. Like we got to figure this out. You know, it's not like neither of us were going to get divorced with each other. We still love this person. How do we fix this? Where I think some people might be like, ooh, I'm happy we learned this now because I can't do this forever. And that, which is a valid feeling, you know, for depending on what it is. But if it's just simply the growing pains of learning the how to live, that's different. I think people, but it's hard. It's in hindsight, I can see the difference. If I was, you know, 1 year in a relationship, we move in with each other, it might be hard for me to understand the difference of learning to live with another person versus I don't like living with this other person.
Right. Yeah. I definitely think you don't know your partner fully if you don't know what they're like to live with and you want to be married to them and live with them. Right. Because that's a big part. Like what someone's like if you share space with them is different than who they are. And maybe, you know, like there could be, somebody could have just some crazy bad habits or whatever else. And it's like, I would highly recommend living with someone before you marry them. Mm-hmm. So you don't get a big surprise. That's not a good surprise on your wedding night or whatever else.
Right. Yeah. There are also things I think of like when people don't realize too, is finding how to pick your battles. And I think that happens in your first year too, where it's like, I'm not a dirty person, but I am a messy person. And I think there's a difference, right? I'm a very clean person, but I also like having a pile of clothes next to my, I'm a cluttered person. Right. And so I had to figure out, all right, what's acceptable clutter that allows my ADHD brain to like still function. Cause I function better when it's not cluttered, but I need my spaces where I can be cluttered to be there and certain things. And so like figuring out where is allowed, you know, what shared spaces are allowed, what shared spaces are allowed to be differently. But that's part of that negotiation. And if you have one partner that's like, no, it's fucking my way everywhere, that's also going to lead to a lot of issues down the road. So it is probably better to find that out early on.
I had to realize that like when I wake up, unless I'm really tired and then I am tired, but I wake up and my brain turns fully on and I'm ready to have any conversation about any subject ever. Mm-hmm. And my wife is a normal person. So there would be times that I'd wake up and be like, did you hear about this intense political thing that's happening? Or like I want to get into this. Like, I just remembered a trauma I had or something wild. And she's like, it's 8 a.m. Please. Yeah.
It takes me 2 hours before my brain's turned on. I'm the same way as your wife. Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's not right. Because I just am so excited to talk to her always. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I'm aware that I've been sleeping. I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait.
Oh my God, there's so many things I've been thinking about that I need to tell you about.
Yeah. And, you know, she works. Yeah. So, like, everyone knows I'm obsessed with my wife. But so I had to learn, like, hey, don't do that. Just like her favorite thing to do. Let me tell you this, like Saturday early, like when we wake up Saturday or Sunday is clean. I hate that.
That's like a fun thing.
Yes. Ah. Yes. I know. She's like, 8 a.m., let's clean the bathrooms. I'm like, this is my nightmare.
Right.
So, you know,
it's we just woke up. It's 8 a.m.
I want to talk about politics, not clean bathrooms. So it's like, you know, you just learn each other's things and then you figure out what works best. So like she will clean or, you know, wait for me to wake up and then I'll clean. And I try and start the mornings in an easier way. And I don't just trauma dump first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
or info dump. A lot of times I've just hit her with like all the facts of something that I've learned. And she's like, I don't even know what you just said.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
I have, that's my problem is I'll get really excited. Sometimes I'm like, I want to tell you, and I've gotten better. It kills me that it took till my 40s before I was finally able to understand the signs when someone does not care about what you're saying.
Yes.
And it hurts a little bit, you know, like to know, but it also makes me feel like, oh my God, how many years of my life have I just been like, I need to tell you all about this comic book I just read. It was 12 comic book series, and I really want to get into it because I think it's correlated to our current political situation that we're in right now. For instance, and you could tell they're like, okay, that is wonderful.
Yeah, but I'm the same way, and I love that shit. I love – if I feel like social – awkwardness or discomfort, like if I think maybe someone else is uncomfortable or you know you meet somebody you don't know them, my first goal is to figure out something they like and talk about it. So like I love that because I'm like, okay, good. Like I'm like I usually can like I'm like, okay, what do they like because I love hearing about things people are interested in. If someone's excited about a topic, unless it's something I hate for some reason, I am down to hear whatever that conversation is.
Right.
So I sometimes it's soothing, Jesco. And it takes the social pressure off people. Yeah. Sometimes.
No, I personally, but I think it's also I feel like it's a neurodivergent thing. Also, like I love info dumps. I'm like, you want to tell me about these rocks? Hell yeah! Tell me more about those. That's great. I have no, and I might forget it. Afterwards, like I'm not, it might not be.
Oh yeah, it doesn't stay.
But I like seeing people excited about things. I think that's what it is. I'm like, that makes me excited about it. Like I can match your energy in that regard, with some exceptions. Every once in a while, even I will be like, no, this isn't working.
Yeah.
But for the most part, there are exceptions.
There are exceptions.
You know, like I can't. I'm not going to get excited about crypto. That's
If ever you got to get them on like talking about blockchains and then like crypto scams, then it's interesting. That's when I love like there's been a lot of really good scams and cons with crypto that like I'll be like, okay, do you know this though? Because crypto alone,
I do. Like 5 years ago, I bought my one crypto purchase. I don't remember what it's called. It's the only thing I ever bought because I was able to buy a billion of it for $50.
What?
I know our show's about to end and we're talking about crypto.
You talked about crypto.
I know. I brought it up as something I don't care about and now I want to share.
And now you're talking about it.
It was, I bought a Shiba Inu coin. And it was, I was able to buy, like it was something like, I bought like 1 billion or 100 million of it or something like that because it's worth nothing. Like at least at the time, it's worth like I have like it's like worth like $1,500 now. What I have,
I just
the price of it right now. That was kind of a surprise. But I bought. I was like, if there's ever a time in your life where you can buy a billion of something for $50, how are you going to say no to that, right? And it's obviously it turned out to be a good. I wish I had bought more. Apparently, I should have invested more than that. But so I like that I am a shibillionaire. I am a Shiba Inu. Coin billionaire, and it will probably never, but if who knows, I don't understand crypto enough because I don't care about it. What if it's worth a penny one day? Then I'm gonna retire as a crypto shibillionaire.
Wow, I mean, you're a crypto bro.
I am. That's clear. I feel weird about owning it, but I don't want to, I don't even know how to sell it because it's in some sort of weird wallet that I just don't want to deal with it. So it's just gonna sit there,
it's just gonna live there.
Did I ever tell you I owned 100 Bitcoin or could have owned 100 Bitcoin at one point, which would be worth
Oh shit! What happened?
I was selling my computer in grad school, or like right after grad school, and somebody, and I put it on Craigslist, and somebody offered me. They're like, "Hey, if you want, I'll trade you." And this is back when it was worth like a dollar a Bitcoin. Uh-huh. It was worth like nothing. I don't remember what year it was, but they offered me 100 Bitcoin for it. I was like, "Get the fuck out of here with your Bitcoin bullshit!" I was like, "What the hell's a Bitcoin?" And that was
you made
not,
that up
at the time. I was the, or at least it felt like I was the smart one. I was like, I don't want to. What are these? What the hell are you? I need money. I'm a broke, you know, adjunct professor. I don't know if I was a grad student or adjunct, but I was broke for a long period of time. So it's hard to narrow it down. But it was enough that I was like, I need money to buy groceries. Like that's
I'm starving.
Yeah, I can't buy food with whatever this random.
With your imaginary
with your
money.
Imaginary computer coins. Get the fuck out of here. And I'm like, and somebody did make me feel better though. They said, because I was like, I'd be a millionaire if I had said yes to that. And a friend of mine said, no, you wouldn't have, because you would have sold it back when it started to be worth money, because it would have been stupid back then not to sell it. But I could have pulled on, I don't know. I still beat myself up about that.
We'll never know.
I'll never know. I probably would have lost access to it, actually, if we're going to be really honest here. And that would have felt even worse knowing that I have like millions of dollars in Bitcoin that I could never, ever access because I wouldn't know how to do it.
What was my username?
Yeah, like, I don't even know how to sell the SHIB coin I have, the Shiba Inu coin I have right now. So along those lines, that was a good way to end the episode. Crypto, our new crypto podcast will be launching next week.
Clearly, we're experts. Yep. Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. As you know, we have the pre-show on Patreon, so check that out. We have our socials, which are always linked to the episode. And other than that, friends, we'll see you next week.
Bye. Love you.
Bye.